Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers and you and I kind of sort of have an extra day off, an extra couple days off.
Yeah, I was rooting so hard for OKC on like multiple levels in this game, and that was certainly one of them. I had some work to do with the Lakers, so I didn't get to see a single minute of the game. That said, I don't think how either team plays each other has much to do with how they match up with us. So Looking forward to kind of getting into both teams and how we might match up against them.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I find myself really frustrated with Steven Adams. Like really, really frustrated with him because he's paid, pretty well. He's considered one of the better centers in the NBA. And for stretches of that game, you can't even really tell he's on the court unless he's like missing a layup or coming short on an offensive rebound. And when you're going up against this Houston team, if you're going to play a big like that, they really have to make their presence known. And I think there is inherent value in just him being in the key as a deterrent for Houston getting to the rim or whatever. And, that's where you'll see some value, I think, in the series with the Lakers where, in Dwight and JaVale's minutes, they'll be just an inherent deterrent as well. But I watched Steven Adams and I'm like, man, like you just got to do more, bud. And I don't know if it's because of the way that they run their offense or whatever, but it's kind of frustrating. Today's show, what we're going to do, we were planning on basically recording this as a Lakers-Rockets preview, but the Rockets lost. So we are going to look. It's now a coin flip. It could go either way in this one. I still think Houston is a better team, but OKC could very well win Game 7, in which case the Lakers would have an interesting matchup there and probably one a probably safer matchup. So what we're going to do is we're going to preview Lakers Thunder and then Lakers Rockets. And then in the final segment, we haven't done this in a while. We're just going to have some fun with some silver screen and roll headlines to get you to start your Tuesday off on a little positive note. So let's start with OKC. What is the one thing that as you're watching OKC, you think to yourself, okay, the Lakers have them absolutely beat here?
So I think teams that have to run drop coverages or have a traditional five are going to have difficulty against us. I actually think this is something that if we get to the Clippers is an advantage that we have. I think we saw this a lot. Lakers ran the fewest pick and rolls in the NBA this season, and we saw more of it against Portland. And part of that is because Hassan Whiteside and Yusuf Nurkic are traditional bigs that kind of have to hang back in the paint. And we saw a lot more LeBron AD pick and rolls. And that's where AD was just killing them with them pick and pops at 16 feet out, just bucket after bucket. Now Adams is able to more effectively come out on the perimeter and hedge, but against LeBron, he's probably going to have to be in more of a drop. So I just think with AD's guard skills, and I think that's really what makes him special. I mean, he's a special defender, but on the offensive end, we post him up, he's fine. He's, really good on the boards. He has done it less this season, and I think that'd be more important against Houston, perhaps. But what makes him special is, like, a guy that big shouldn't be able to be stepping back and doing, sham god crossovers. And he's very bendy, too, right? Like, he'll jump off one foot, and the torso's going this way, and the feet are going that way. It's just, like, guard forward type stuff that is going to be really hard for, especially if Adams is involved in the ball screen. Somebody's going to have to be helping Adams, and they're relatively small, or if they're not small, like a guy like Gallinari isn't that much of a presence around the rim, right? So I just think it's a similar story to what we saw against Portland, where AD is wrecking shop, and it's a similar story with LeBron as well, right? Where I'm just not sure who defends him in a seven game series. They're really guard oriented, kind of in a different way than Portland is. So that would be a bit of a challenge, but yeah, just the size and speed of us. But to be to be fair, in a lot of ways, I think that's true in a matchup against Houston as well.
Yeah, I think with OKC, I mean, against any team, really, if the best hope that they have against LeBron is a rookie, I mean, that right there is just a check in the box. You know, that's just, it's whether or not LeBron wants to go out and dominate. Now, Dort is really well equipped to be able to deal with LeBron, but over the course of a playoff series, I think LeBron figures him out pretty relatively quickly.
Yeah, it'd be shocking if a 20-year-old could, like, if LeBron didn't kind of pick him apart in his tendencies and what he likes to do. Yeah.
You'd be talking about one of the best defenders of all time.
Right, if you're able to do that at 20 years old. Yeah.
Sure. But and then you know, in terms of things that OKC does that I think really make me nervous, Chris Paul, point guards who primarily look to facilitate but are also effing dead shot shooters, to me, are like, that's my favorite kind of point guard. And with Paul, if their shooters are hitting and Paul is given enough room to just go out there and pick which shooter he wants to pick from, like, the Lakers are going to lose that game. But I just don't know if they have the shooting to be able to do that. So, like, even while Paul makes me nervous, and as evidenced by what he was doing to Robert Covington, you didn't watch the game, but they would switch Covington out onto him on the perimeter. And Paul was basically, now he hit a couple pretty insane three-pointers, but he was also getting right by him to the cup. He was getting whatever he wanted. So, like, in that respect, Paul makes me nervous. But OKC, outside of, like, Gallinari and Bazley, they just don't have the shooting that I think fully takes advantage of what Chris Paul can do out there. You said something about their guards being, you know, they're guard oriented in a different way. Is that just like both Chris Paul can hit from 3-point range, but neither of them have that like 35-foot range,
right? And
Schroeder can't shoot at all.
Yeah, it's also an athleticism thing. Like Dame can turn on the jets and dunk on you, you know, and that's not something CP3 or even Schroeder can do. Now they're both, you know, they can both get buckets, and CP3 is more through savvy, whereas Schroeder is more, you know, athleticism. He's very quick. He's got a lot of like right-handed layups while falling away off his right foot type shots. You know, he's kind of clever around the basket, but they're similar in that I think our size, we can really pressure them and kind of funnel them into our bigs in a way where, like, if Dame gets ahead of steam, he's dangerous. If it's CP3, he's more likely to kind of sidestep and take a 15-footer, which he's, you know, deadly at. But I think, you know, if we're switching in a late-game lineup, and he probably looks to pick on Kuz, because Kuz, for as well as he's done, I've got a video about him coming out, I believe on Tuesday, and about his defense, savvy guards can still kind of take advantage of drawn fouls on him, especially the type of guard CP3 is. So, you know, they provide more difficulties in that respect, and they've got more scoring all over the place than Portland does. Like, in terms of I really like Gallinari on the offensive end. You know, they've got guys who can more versatility, I think, in the front court in terms of their front court scoring. They've got that lineup of CP3, Schroeder, Gallinari, who are the two other guys, but it's the best lineup in the NBA from a net rating standpoint. And so they can be very potent offensively, but I just don't see how they defend us. Whereas with Houston's more of like a swarming defense. Houston's pretty good on the defensive end and has caused us problems with what they do with this smaller lineup. So I'm more worried about Houston from a defensive perspective than I would be about OKC.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, it just comes down to, I just think Houston is such a weird matchup that they make me more nervous than OKC. Like, I don't think the Lakers are probably one of the better traditional lineups or traditional teams than we've seen in a little while, right? Where, like, most of the teams that have won recently have had non-traditional kind of amoebic lineups where everybody switches, nobody really plays a position, right? The Lakers play something a little closer to a traditional lineup. And OKC, if they're going to go out there with like Steven Adams and Danilo Gallinari and Dort, and then, you know, I guess it's not really fully traditional because they have Schroeder and Paul out there together so much.
Sure.
But if they're going to go out there with like something closer to a traditional front court, then like the Lakers are going to eat that up because that's a strength against a strength, and the Lakers' strength is just a little stronger. Take another quick second here and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Houston, seeing as Pete, you have spent a significant amount of time watching those two teams lined up.
That's right. That's what I was doing today. Yes.
Today's show is brought to you in part by rockauto.com. Rockauto.com has helped millions of people all over the place try to find the parts, or actually find the parts that they need, as they look to fix their own car themselves. There's a sense, I was talking to Jen about this the other day, there's a sense of accomplishment that comes with fixing something yourself. I have AAA. I could have called to ask them to come and fix my tire and put my car, or either tow my car. Probably would have been safer, honestly, to tow my car. But either way, I kind of said, you know what, I'm going to try doing this myself. And after I survived the trip to the tire store, I did actually feel a little bit better about the experience. So if you want to get that kind of sense of accomplishment, then head on over to rockauto.com and shop their entire and insane category of auto parts to fix your car yourself. It doesn't matter where you are doing this for the first time, whether you've been doing this your whole life, maybe it's a generational thing that you and your dad or you and your mom, you know, grew up working on your car together, whatever it might be. Regardless of your background, you're going to get the same access to the same great tools and the same great parts and the same great prices. So head on over to rockauto.com. And then tell them that you found rockauto.com via this show by writing Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. And then again, that's rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. So I'm interested. I mean, it's tough. I would have started the podcast basically by asking, hey, have you seen anything from OKC's wins that make you, you know, maybe a little less nervous about Houston or whatever. But I kind of want to talk about this because I found myself realizing this over the course of this series. And I think it's because I think the Lakers and Houston are going to wind up against each other. And so I'm just already preparing myself for not liking Houston, and not just as like a basketball team, but also as like a city because of the Astros and all that. I find myself realizing I don't like the micro ball. I talked myself into it in the regular season when I saw it in small doses or whatever. But when you're seeing that night in, night out, and it's like 57 three-pointers attempted here and 58 three-pointers attempted here and 73,000 three-pointers attempted in the first half of another game. And then, you know, all the foul hunting and the charge hunting on the other end, it's everything that I find wrong about basketball in the NBA nowadays. How do you feel about it now that you've probably seen more of it? You've definitely seen more of it against the Lakers, but the style of play in general, how do you feel about it at this point?
It's funny. I'm the more I watch it, the more I appreciate it, the more I think it's interesting. It's not something that, like, it's not my cup of tea, but it's a necessary component of the evolution of basketball, right? Like the Rockets represent, and other teams do in some respect, but I always talk about like the different wisdoms of basketball, and they're pushing the idea of three is more than two. And this idea of playing at the rim or beyond the 3-point line as far as it will go. I think that it's built on a bit of a flawed premise in that the very nature of basketball is the offense is trying to get that and the defense is trying to force you into the shots in between, and the defense is going to win some possessions. So you have to be able to be productive on those shots in between. And when you kind of eschew those shots, you're not going to get, you know, like Houston scored 100 points tonight, you know, and their mm-hmm. defense has been fantastic in this series, but their offense has been like, okay. And I think a big part of that is you can't ignore such a huge chunk of the court. So that's the part that I don't particularly like, but I love when the game, when people try something new. So mm-hmm. the proliferation of zone defenses over the last year, year and a half in the NBA has been super cool. I've always wondered, like, everyone's, you know, the conventional wisdom has always been, oh, you can't play zone in the NBA. The shooters are too good. And it's like, that's not nuanced enough for me, right? Like, you can't ever play zone, you know, like, come on, there's got to be some version of it, right? It's just too broad of a brush to paint it with. And so the Rockets represent a different version of that. Now, it is so far away from like the triple threat basketball and the footwork, although Harden's remarkable, like his skill set in us complaining about how he flops or draws fouls or Houston's style of play, I think we can lose an appreciation for just how incredibly skilled he is. Mm-hmm. But just stylistically, like, I grew up on Kobe, right? I grew up on Magic. I grew up on it. Basketball has a certain soul to it, in my opinion, that the Rockets lack, and that mm-hmm. matters, right? It's easy to be like, oh, well, that's nice and fluffy or whatever, but like, it's all about wins and losses. I think it does impact wins and losses. I don't think it's a coincidence that they haven't been able to quite get where they want to go. And we'll see, you know, if they're going to do that this year, there's a good chance they have to go through OKC, right? Which will take 7 games if they do. Then the Lakers, then the Clippers, and then whoever comes out of the East. That's a hellified run to the finals. So if they're able to do it, then more power to them, right? But I appreciate it having a team in the league that pushes the game forward, or at least tests its boundaries the way that the Rockets do.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't mind that aspect of it. And I actually do enjoy that aspect of it. I mean, hell, this entire show wouldn't exist if we didn't try something new, right? Like all of NBA coverage wouldn't be the way that it is if not for, you know, a few people with computers who started blogs or whatever and opened up this gateway for non-traditional media. So in that respect, yeah, I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't say that I enjoy the newness and this attempt at you know, fast forwarding some of the evolution. It's just the foul hunting. I can't do it. Like sure. I can't do. And now
this is a league wide problem though, Anthony. It's a league wide problem. You've pointed it out, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, like,
it's so against the spirit of the rules, you know?
It's just, well, for one thing, I think it's a part of the rules. Like, I think the rules themselves are flawed. And I find myself watching, you know, the game. And like today, Russ had a play where he dribbled to the basket, took a layup, and the play looked like it might be a foul, but he's screaming and one as he's on his way up before he makes any kind of contact. Then he gets the call anyway, because it kind of looks like it might be one. You go back and look and nobody's even close to him. And it takes so little for little people to get fouls nowadays. And the game has become, like, I know I'm going to sound really old here, the game has become so effing soft that it makes it really difficult for anybody to play any kind of defense. And maybe that's what they're looking for. You know, maybe they wanted some of the inflated, like Denver and Utah is this really fascinating or really interesting series that wouldn't be otherwise if every time, you know, Donovan Mitchell or Jamal Murray fell over, they didn't get a couple free throws out of it, right? They're both going, you know, 50 against 50 and 45 against 45 and, you know, whatever their crazy scoring output is. But you look at it and they're shooting all these free throws too that, like, don't really feel earned. And like, to me, Houston, when I watch Harden, there are plays where it's like down the stretch of a game and their team needs a nice clean look. And he's more focused on getting a foul call than actually getting a decent shot attempt, when he's skilled enough, as you just talked about, to get a decent shot attempt whenever he wants it. So like, I watch that and I watch, like, sometimes Eric Gordon will do the whole pump fake and jump, you know, 90 degrees in the opposite direction to try to get a foul call and then get rewarded for it for some reason. It's just the foul hunting has gotten to this nth degree place that I when friends and family will say, yeah, I used to love the NBA, and politics aside, because that's all bullcrap. But when they say it's just, it's so much flopping and it's so much free throws and it's so much this. And I've reached the point where I kind of agree.
Yeah, no, I think that that's something that needs to be addressed in the offseason. Is there has to, like, there's a play that Dame does where Caruso got a, you know, 3-shot foul on this, where he'll come off of an off-ball screen and then it'll like stop, and it's just intended to get you to run into him, right? Or right. Or it kind of, it punishes bad defense, or it punishes good defense, being able to stay attached to your defender,
or even the attempt at playing defense.
Right, right. Like there's a chicken shitness to some of the foul drawing, right? That's like, come on, man. Like, is it a foul? Yes, it's technically a foul, but come on, man. And there are several of those types of fouls where the players, especially the guards, have very much learned where they come from. You know, like the whole shot fake, they jump toward you. Dwayne Wade has drawn tons of free throws on that ages ago, right? Like, that's been around forever. But there are other little places where, like, you hook underneath a player's, a defender's arm, who's not even like reaching in, right? Like, you just hook underneath and you go up for a shot, and you go, or you throw your head back. I hate the freaking guys that throw their head back, right? And just all of the ways of kind of gaming the system. It just, I do think very much that the competition committee needs to address that.
Well, like the way I put it on Twitter the other day was like, if you were playing pickup and you tried to call a foul doing some of the crap that NBA players do to get fouls called, you wouldn't get a foul called. Not on top of that, you'd probably get your ass kicked, right? Like, if you kept trying to do all that stuff where, like you're talking about, like Lou Williams does this all the time, where he'll be dribbling and he'll take like one step with his you know, right foot into the defender, throw his head back, and then put the shot up, and he'll get a foul called that way. If you did that and then called a foul a few times at any kind of a pickup game, you would get fought. Like, somebody would want to throw hands with you. And I watch the NBA, and these are, like, in my opinion, these are the best athletes on the planet. Like, in terms of the sport produces the best athletes on the planet. And these guys are playing probably the softest iteration of the game, you know, with the way that it's refereed and the way that they apparently want it refereed. And that's just, it's a bit of a bummer to me, because these guys are so capable of such incredible feats of athleticism. And it all kind of just comes down to who's most willing to fall down the most often and which referee is going to reward them the most often.
You want to talk about Houston in segment 3?
No, we're going to do the headlines. Yeah, we'll scrap the headlines and we'll actually talk about Houston. And I'll try not to rant about the aspects of this league that supremely bother me.
Yeah, they are what they are. Yeah, annoying as they may be.
That segment was brought to you by the NBA, by the way.
Right.
So let's actually talk about Houston, and same question to start this. Is there anything that the Lakers have that you're looking at the matchup between the Lakers and Houston that you just say, like, is there a pitch that the Lakers could throw that Houston couldn't touch?
Yes. The aerial attack. Like, make Houston beat you, compete with you, like, 11, 12 feet above the rim. Like, I think of like Rob Gronkowski on a fade route against a 5'10 cornerback, right? Like, balls on the 1-yard line, and throw the ball up in the air and let them go get it. From watching the tape today, it was very interesting. We were really good in transition, and we were really good on the pick and roll. And now transition scramble situations are when defenses aren't set, that's when athletes thrive. The bigger, faster, stronger type guy. So it makes sense, right? That we would be a lot better than Houston, which is funny because you when Houston first started coming up as this Harden team, it was this like run and gun type of team, but they've actually slowed down significantly in how they play. And the Lakers should really be looking to push tempo against them. And so those are times when we'll be successful. Obviously on the offensive boards, I think like LeBron puncturing the defense and dribble penetrating, even if he doesn't make the shot, I think getting a shot up on the rim, that's an advantage. Again, 11 feet above the rim, let's make Houston play us in that aerial type of attack. But that can be easier said than done, right? Like they're kind of this swarming defense. We're not as good in the half court, although on the pick and rolls, I was pleasantly surprised because they switch everything. And normally ball screens don't work that much against, but because the size discrepancy is so enormous, AD just kind of cuts in front of them. And again, you just throw the ball up in the air. So I think they're a team for us. We didn't look good against them. We only played like one real game against them because the first time we played them, they had Capella and hadn't really committed to the style. And then the third time we played them was in the bubble when LeBron didn't play. Right. And so that middle time, though, they handled us pretty well at Staples. But I think they're a team that the more you get to focus on just them, the more successful a team will be. And I think OKC is kind of demonstrating that, right? Like this was a series. Yeah, this is a series where, you know, we're all still kind of expecting Houston, I think, to win this. Although, isn't it interesting going into a game seven? If this was going back to Houston right now, I'd be like, oh, the Rockets got this. Now, especially if, you know, I didn't watch game six, but if they've zeroed in on a matchup like Chris Paul versus Covington, that's where series get won and lost. Chris Paul didn't have to beat anybody else, but if he gets to pick whoever he wants and he's got Robert Covington's number, who's a very good defender, right? But if there's something about CP3 that he just can't stick with him, that could be the series right there. So yeah, the lack of home court advantage in a game seven, super fascinating. I can't wait to see that and the other series in the West, the Denver Utah.
Yeah, they're both great. I think I agree with you completely. I think the thing that I'm most nervous about from the Lakers' perspective in this one is that they fall prey to the fall victim. Yeah, you don't fall prey. That doesn't usually happen. But I hope they don't fall victim to the matchup hunting that they could do, right? Where they set a pick and roll. And it becomes, you know, whoever was guarding LeBron in the first place, maybe it's Jeff Green going up against AD, and the Lakers are going to say to themselves, oh, well, that's a matchup we should really try to take advantage of. Or in some spots, it'll be like the one thing I think most of the league understands this now. But for some reason, every so often, you'll still see some team get a switch with James Harden and have their guy post him up. Like that's the one form of defense James Harden is elite at. Like not only is he good, but he's elite at that. And so you know when it comes to that kind of stuff, that's where what you're talking about, where when the Lakers have looked their best against them, it's a lot of lobs over the top, whether it's for actual alley-oops or just, you know, passes over the top of a full front, whatever it might be. That's when the Lakers have always looked their best. And I think that's where I think AD is so critical, because if you put him in the middle of the defense and you have, you know, JaVale or Dwight finishing lobs, you know, big to big lobs, like there is nothing Houston can do with that, especially if the first pass is also coming from LeBron. So if LeBron just throws a pass over the top of whoever is guarding him to a place where only AD can catch it in the middle of the court, and then he turns around and the passes to Dwight or JaVale in a spot where nobody else can catch it because everybody else is 6'6" and under. Like those are things that the Lakers can do that OKC has no real answer for. Their answer for it, ironically, is to give up something that looks a lot easier to score on than even that does.
Right. That's right. And now that said, if Houston keeps you ground on the ground, it's like it's a different series for AD and how he would need to dominate. Like Whiteside and Nurkic had to play off of him so much that he was like, he's at his best when he gets to use his guard skills. But against Houston, you know, they're fine if AD's trying to beat Covington or Tucker or, you know, McLemore, yeah, or Jeff Green or someone like that off the dribble from 20 feet. But, and they're fine with him posting up too, right? Like that's something we did a lot without a lot of success. And I think it's funny, the more I watch tape on the Lakers in the regular season, as opposed to how they approached the Portland series, is I think in a lot of ways the regular season was practice for the Lakers. Like I think AD getting all of those post touches was in some ways like, it'd be great if we had this in the playoffs. Let's get you 500 possessions of this season. Mm-hmm. And we're still going to win a lot of games because we're a very talented team. But seeing the Lakers kind of go away from stuff like that and seeing them go more toward their strengths, I don't think we'll see as many AD post-ups, although I thought he passed better out of that against Portland. But Portland's a team that's going to make you look good on offense in ways that Houston can make you look bad. So, yeah, they're a team where – you know, there were ways where we looked really good against them and we didn't emphasize it as much as I think we will in a 7-game series where we're just focused on them. But they can also really limit us in their quickness, in beating us to the spot where they don't let us get around the basket. Because if we can get penetration off of, whether it's off of dribble penetration, offensive rebounds were a form of that too, you know, LeBron driving kicks, things like that, we're really in business. But if they can keep us swinging the ball around the perimeter, then we're gonna have a much tougher time scoring.
Yeah, absolutely. Last quick thing here before we get out of here, this is now a 7-game series. The Clippers are also waiting for the result of a 7-game series. I'm guessing that you saw the Clippers beat Dallas in game 6 the other day.
Yes. Yes, I did.
So I'm wondering, like, I walked away from that Clippers, that game 6 win there. And now this is always how it goes in the playoffs, right? Where either a team you like wins a game and you feel like they're never going to lose again, or a team you like doesn't win the game and you feel like, oh, they're going to go, you know, they're going to get swept or whatever. But I walked away from the Clippers winning that game against Dallas. And I said to myself, woof, on a couple of counts. One, their defense came alive and they just, you know, for stretches, they just really swarmed everything about, Dallas, especially when they needed stops. And then two, Kawhi looked like Terminator out there. And that makes me pretty nervous. So, I'm kind of curious now that both the Clippers and the Lakers have advanced, and as they both await their next opponent, how do you feel about, you know, how you felt about those teams heading into the postseason, either against each other or just in general? Has anything changed in from how you thought of the matchup before the seeding games were all over?
Yeah, what's changed is that with both the Lakers and Clippers, who I think are the two best teams in the NBA, you start seeing kind of more of who they really are in a playoff series. Like a game 5 of the Clippers where it's 2-2, like they need to win that game, you know, like game 2 for the Lakers, we needed to win that game. And you start to see more of the, okay, this is when you really need to go to something, this is what you've got. Now the Clippers have the Terminator and Kawhi Leonard, right? Like that's really all they need to go to. And so with Kawhi, I'm fascinated if we get to a Lakers Clippers conference finals to see how we defend him. With the nature of how the Mavs are constructed, it was Maxi Kleber, right, who was defending, or was it Brokoff who was defending him? Sorry, I mixed them up. In
Spider-Man.
For most of that series. Yes, yes, exactly. During most of that series. And he had to play off of Kawhi because if he pressed up on him, Kawhi would drive by him. And there's nobody behind him that can really do anything about Kawhi driving to the basket. Whereas with the Lakers, you do. You can go small, right? And you can stretch them out and still have AD back there protecting the rim. Dwight can be effective against the Clippers, although he was off and on with that, right? JaVale can still start against them, most likely. So you can press up on Kawhi in a way that Dallas couldn't if you're the Lakers. And then on the other end of the floor, they're so good in passing lanes. Like they're great at jumping, Kawhi getting deflections and steals, and Paul George is great at that as well. And so when they really turned up the intensity, what they look like, that is something where that end of the floor LeBron with his jump passes is going to be, he's going to have to be like a quarterback who looks off a great free safety with his eyes, right? And you know, kind of looks to the left and then, you know, back to the right just to move that guy's eyes, because they're very aggressive in passing lanes, and they bite on that first, like, if I always saw, like, if Luka looked in one direction, they've already got that, like, one step forward. They're looking to jump that. So you can use that against them, ball fakes and kind of deception to get them moving in one direction can get us open shots. So those are the things, like, I don't know, man, like, I felt good about, this is not just a matter of who I'm employed by, but I thought that, like, hey, we can really do this year. We can go all the way. And nothing that I've seen in the bubble has changed that. There's just more nuance to the how and what and where and when of when a team like the Clippers really decides to turn it up.
Yeah, it really annoys me how easy their next series is going to be. Like, it really pisses me off. Because, like, not only do the Lakers not really benefit from having home court and fighting for home court and, like, honoring the basketball gods by playing when they were healthy, you know? But on top of that, like, the Clippers also get the easier series in the second round. Like, what the hell? You know? So 2020 strikes again, but yeah, that's just when I watch the Clippers really put the clamps down on Dallas, and I think Dallas is a very different team, and I think, you know, Dallas is, like, you kind of understand what they're trying to do every single play. Like, they basically have, like, all right, Luka's gonna run a pick and roll, and he's gonna give himself a great look, or he's going to find one of Dallas's, like, 33 really good shooters, or good to really good shooters, or he's going to take one of those step back three pointers. And, like, those are basically their three pitches. And it's fairly easy to kind of time which one is going to lead to the other. Whereas, like, the Lakers, I think they have, like, the way that they score is diverse enough that it's not as predictable, and that might be just me, like, you know, convincing myself of this, but like the Dallas not having a player of 80s caliber really made it difficult on Luka over the course of that series. And the fact that the Lakers have somebody like that still makes me fairly confident, even though the Clippers looked really effing good in game six.
Bro, we're the only team that has two superstars.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
And
the Paul George hate here.
I mean, Paul George is really good. He's an all-star, right? But is he a superstar? You know, like, is he an AD caliber guy? Like, it's probably generous to classify him as that. Now, does that mean that, you know, depth and things like that don't, I mean, of course they matter. Of course they make a difference. But in the playoffs, by and large, like you said, you're spamming your best play with your best player. And when you've got two guys who, and like LeBron and AD are both capable of having an enormous mismatch over your guy, right? So you can, like, scheme for Luka. Like, they started blitzing and trapping Luka more in game five of that series and had some success there. Like, but you just devote all of your defensive energy toward limiting Luka and the actions that Luka comes off of, you're fine. Whereas you can really zero in on LeBron, and if you're not game planning for AD as well and devoting extra attention to him, he could give you 40 as well. And that's something that really the late, like, Westbrook's capable of it, Paul George is capable of it, but the Lakers are really the only team that's in the playoffs where they've got two guys where, like, if you don't do it, it's probably gonna happen.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. All right, that's gonna do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We're gonna switch up the schedule for this one, and Pete and I are gonna record after Wednesday's game seven to be able to figure out who the Lakers are gonna be going up against in round two. So I will be back tomorrow, and I'll probably be able to find a guest for that one, so you guys won't have to hear 20-25 minutes of my voice. But other than that, though, typical week, typical playoff week. This is how this thing goes, man. Like, it's and especially in the bubble, where it's just like game after game after game after game after game. So, and very quickly developing storyline. So stay safe out there. Keep tuning in. And as these stories develop, Pete and I will be able to talk to you about them. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Talk to you.